Has JP McManus got the stayers hurdle sorted? Who wins the King George? Will Kempton survive? And why on earth are horses now winning at 300 to 1 and 250 to 1 in 1 week? All that on more on this week's festive edition of The Front Page. Hello there, happy Christmas, and welcome to this festive edition of The Front Page. We have lots to look back on, lots to look forward to, reflecting on a great Saturday and Friday at Ascot, where the Christmas meeting perhaps unearthed a new staying hurdling superstar. We'll be looking forward to a spectacular running of the King George VI Chase, and also talking about the latest in relation to the future of Kempton Park. And I shall be asking Matt Rennie and Maddie Playle how much they had on the 300 to 1 Exeter winner blow, as they both undoubtedly will have cleaned up. Joining myself then in the studio, Lee Mottershead, is Maddie Playle. Hello, Maddie.
Hi, Lee. Long time no see. We're at Ascot together on Saturday. What a lovely day it was.
Wasn't it a lovely day? Look, Ascot does Christmas incredibly well, as I'm sure Matt Rennie does Norwich. Where you are. Is Norwich looking particularly festive?
I haven't actually been in since I've been back from York yet, but York has been very much festive for a good old month now. The markets, the famous markets now, were thriving. So, while I was up there, I was still always focused on the racing, of course.
Yeah, I popped into the York Christmas market while I was over for the gym crack and came home with a bottle of rhubarb gin.
I think I know which stand exactly you got that from as
Absolutely, a little window into my world there. Talking about presents and gifts, producer Sam has been out and got Matt, myself and Matt three lovely presents. Matt, yours will be in the post. But Maddie, we won already, didn't we, by going to Ascot on Saturday. Nothing cheesy about that, Link. What did you make of the long walk hurdle? It was, I thought it was a cracking renewal on paper this year. It was a really absorbing contest, run at an end-to-end gallop, and it resulted in Ampose Twar galloping past strong leader with Honesty Policy finishing off well behind them. First and third for JP McManus. Has he got this year's Stayers Hurdle winner?
I think he very likely has, but I don't necessarily think it was the winner in Ampose Twar. I took a lot of positives out of Honesty Policy's run. He was quite keen in the early stages. Of course, it was his seasonal reappearance. A lot of the paddock judges were telling me he was very fit, but undoubtedly, you know, Ampose Twar had two runs on him, so I'm sure he was fitter. Loved the way he went around and thought the way he stayed on at the climb to the line was really, really encouraging when you think about Cheltenham and his suitability for the stayers. So, it's funny, isn't it? We see a strong travelling dominant winner and we go, no, I'd rather the one that stayed on well to finish third. But there's something about Ampose Twar. I think that strong travelling style, he doesn't always find that much off the bridle. He can be quite tricky. And I just like a horse that can sort of get their elbows out, dig deep. And I think Honesty Policy as the younger horse is really exciting as the season goes forward.
Okay, Maddie, keener then on JP's third than JP's first. What was your take on the race?
I think it was a terrific race, which has left a fantastic conundrum looking forward into the 3 mile staying hurdling division. As you said in your brilliant column this week, that there's never been loads of love for the stayers, but I'm absolutely loving this at the moment. That we've got Tiapu, Ballyburn, Ampose Twar that's going to be leading the British line, Honesty Policy, as you say. Look, Ampose Twar has that sort of typical progressive stayers profile. We've seen the likes of Paisley Park before, graduating from handicaps, grade twos and into grade ones, and been thriving. And I have to say, I thought Nico de Boinville gave him a brilliant ride on Saturday. And he has good form at the Cheltenham Festival before. You know, he ran a stormer in the Coral Cup last year. And the winner, Jimmy DeSoy, we all think is going to shape up into a high-class chaser. So it's likely that handicap form is going to be pretty red hot. I'm inclined to agree with Maddie and lean towards Honesty Policy. I was at Aintree last year when he won the Mersey Novices Hurdle, and he was really, really likeable then, and he's just progressed even more. And you'd expect that he's not hit his ceiling completely yet compared to the others. Maybe this season, you know, one run, he's been his first one in open company as well, and he was a real, real eye catcher. So it's somehow Gordon Elliott's going to have in the Stayers Hurdle division as well. But I would be inclined to be with Honesty Policy, but we're giving it some love. What a fantastic division it's going to be this year.
Yeah. In defence of saying it's not always the most loved, or Matt was saying it doesn't always get that you know, same enthusiasm up. The love of my life came out of the staying hurdle division lead in Thistlecrack, so I won't have that slander.
I forgot about your obsession for Thistlecrack.
Very much an obsession. I had to ring Tom Skew in the week, and I was talking to him about King George's and things, and I every time, I'm so embarrassing, I have to be like, when you won on the best horse, Kempton. He must be like, God, she's nuts, this woman. Yes, and Big Bucks, of course. We've had some brilliant stays, haven't we? It's nice, and to see those reoccurring stars like Paisley Park come back is always great. But I take your point, Matt. I'm only poking fun.
Well, Matt very kindly referenced the column. The point I made in that is that if you look at relative prize money levels, for example, for comparable races, at Cheltenham on trials day, they have three grade twos, a trial for the Gold Cup, trial for the Champion Hurdle, and a trial for the Stayers Hurdle. The trials for the Gold Cup, the Cotswold Chase, and the Champion Hurdle, the International Hurdle, are worth £125,000. The Stayers Hurdle trial, again a grade two, the Cleeve Hurdle, is worth £70,000, even less valuable than the grade two Classic Novice Hurdle on the same card. And this year, for the first time, on this season for the first time, the Ryanair Chase will take the Pride of Place 4 p.m. off time, making the feature race on the card ahead of the Stayers Hurdle. And I found that quite upsetting. Well, maybe not upsetting, but regrettable. Was Iroko's success in the graduation chase on Saturday regrettable or a positive for his Grand National chances? Now, obviously, he won a race. It was his first win in 2 years, so that was a good thing. But as Oliver Greenall, the joint trainer of the horse, was accepting after the race, a wide margin defeat of Firefox might well yield result in a pretty significant rise in Iroko's rating. They'll be a little bit nervous as they wait to see what the handicapper does.
I mean, it's easy for me to say this, but I don't think they should be too worried. Obviously, he was getting weight as well, so maybe that will
£3.
Tamper things a little bit. But I think this horse, we needed to see him win. Like you say, it'd been over 2 years since he won a Warwick Novice Chase. And Oliver Greenall sort of said, yeah, we needed him to get his head in front. And whether you're a believer in the sort of horse psychology of having confidence and things like that, I think with the Grand National, it's very easy for the race to dictate your whole season. Whereas these days, it's less and less of a handicap. You know, it's more about class. So I think a couple of pounds here or there, I think, yes, it can make a difference, but perhaps not as much as days gone by. And, you know, these are really, really talented horses. And I don't think that their whole season should be dominated by the need to go to Aintree. So I thought it was really good. I thought there was so many positives to take out the race. I'm not, like Ollie Greenall said, I'm not 100% sure the other two ran to their ratings either. That'll be something for the handicapper to consider. Firefox made some late errors, and James de Burley was sort of given a very quiet ride before coming into it, but never really finished off. It's an interesting conundrum, but I think whatever Willie Mullins runs in the race now is, you know, has got to be on pole position.
Yeah, okay. Matt, across the 2 days at Ascot, there were plenty of other really exciting performances. Willful was great in the what used to be the Ladbroke Hurdle, this year run as the Ascot Rotary Club Festive Hurdle. It looked a contest packed with quality and potential handicap blots, but Willful ran away with it. Great performance in itself by the horse, but for the connections, it was a tremendously important win, as you'd have gleaned by John Hill Jr. saluting after the race. He'd spent a lot of this year on the sidelines, and the yard run by his dad John Joe and brother AJ had been on the sidelines too. They spent 3 weeks in November without any runners due to a virus. So a win that was packed with meaning for Willful.
Yeah, you say it might not be the biggest race of the season, but the results are arguably the most important for the O'Neills in a way. You said to really kick on now is, you know, it was sort of getting last minute saloon, you know, when are we going to get this season up and running? Because once you're into January, it becomes a bit quieter. We're focused on the major spring festivals. So in terms of seasons for all three of the O'Neills, it's absolutely massive. And I think they all knew that as well. It's really good to see, because the more people compete, the better in this sport. And it must have been galling to get a virus, especially for John Joe and AJ's yard, to get a virus at that that sort of time as well, when you're expecting to really kick on, let's make a groove in the season, and then you've had to pull up stumps essentially, and an incredibly brave call at that time as well. You know, they touched on, you could have gone through that month in November at a single figure strike rate, sort of plodding along, but the effects for the rest of the season could have been severely detrimental. So it shows that bravery is rewarded in this sport. It was a very, very good result, and a much needed result. And hopefully it can kick all three of them on up to the big level again for the rest of the season and beyond.
Yeah, they were chuffed to bits, weren't they, Maddie, on Saturday?
They were. I think that was really nice to see, wasn't it? It's like there's this focus these days towards these big spring festivals, when a big weekend winner can just sort of change the whole outlook and momentum of your season. And we saw that laid bare with Wilful, who's a really good horse, you know, had some good form alongside Alexi and Celtic Dino. Alexi still ran a pretty decent race, I'd wager, and finishing third.
Champion hurdle horse or not?
I mean, I kind of think, I wouldn't put it against him for having a go, put it that way.
Yeah. He could still be improving.
Yeah, you'd have liked to see him win, but it's could be a very open division still. And I don't know if we necessarily saw him at his best. Maybe he's hit his ceiling, but, you know, he's a young horse and there could still be more to come from him. Wouldn't say no.
Also very good to see was Deep Cave winning for Christian Williams. Great to see all things good there now with him on the family front, and with the horses running really well too.
Yeah, I think, it, like you say, family was key to that success. We were there in the winner's enclosure, and we all know what Christian's gone through with his family in recent years. And to have him and his wife, Charlotte, have a daughter on each hip in the winner's enclosure was just really lovely and really touching. And he said afterwards how, you know, a couple of years ago, we wouldn't have really appreciated these wins so much, but now we do. It's also got really interesting backstories. Been trained in France, been trained in Ireland, been all over the place. Clearly has a lot of ability. We've got an interview with his jockey, Jack Tudor, actually, if I can put it up there, in today's paper. And I thought it was a wonderful ride from him. He's so accomplished. I think he's only 23. Yeah. Makes us all feel incredibly old. Could be another Welsh national for him coming up over the festive period. But Mr. Bango.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's just nice to see different people winning, isn't it?
Of course,
and these sort of developed relationships between, I mean, Jack's been riding out for Christian since I think he was about 14. And you really see that. I mean, having been to the yard, you see their relationship, they're friends, and they're very close, and they have the utmost trust in each other. And it's just a really lovely success and a lovely horse.
It was, yeah. And Matt, if we wrap up the Ask action from Friday, a couple of really promising performances from Steel Ally in the Grade 2 non-novice chase, and from Bass Hunter for the Charlie Gordon stable in the big bumper that closed the card.
Yeah, and it's great to see that, you know, these yards, you know, powerful yards enough in Britain, maybe on the fringes of the big powerhouses, have bona fide Grade 1 performers to look forward to for the rest of the season. You know, it's just a case of when rather than if, with Sam Thomas and Dylan Johnston's combination of when they're going to get the Grade 1 winner. They're an absolutely fantastic combination, and Steel Ally looks like he could do that. I'd be going for the Scilly Isles and having a crack at that next. It's certainly more of the winnable Grade 1s in Britain. And you said Chris Gordon and Freddie and his son Freddie at the Storm Dome in a bumper, which has a rich history as well. So, you know, it's Britain's got a nice team going in festive period and beyond to look forward to see if we can put it up to the Irish at the major spring festivals. And just very quickly away from Ascot at Haydock, I just thought it'd be remiss not to mention just how brilliant Joel Parkinson and Sue Smith are doing now that Joel's on the licence. It seemed to have put the real spark back into the Grand National winning yard. You know, I was looking last night at the figures. This season they're operating at a 28% strike rate with chasers, which is magnificent. And obviously they got a maiden to win the Tommy Whittle at the weekend with Grand Jest. And it's not a bad way to warm up for O'Connell's bid to win the Welsh National as well. So, you know, being biased, being from the based in the north of England, it's only better for the sport when there's a powerful northern operations and putting it up to the big boys down south as well. So fair play to them. They've absolutely got their string flying consistently at the moment.
I really love the dual licensing and the different dimension that's brought to training. I interviewed Matt Nichols, who's of course now He's been with Kim Bailey for a long time, but now officially on the licence last week. And I think it just gives you an insight into the dynamics of a yard. And often if they're family, I find that particularly interesting. But even with Joel and Sue, you know, there's a freshness to it and a new energy that I think comes through when you have someone, particularly someone younger, joining the licence officially. And well done to them. Incredible bit of placing. A lot of people were saying, is this horse qualified to run? But yeah. they'd done their homework on that, on Grand Jest, of course, and a dominant win. I'm sure quite a few people won a Christmas bonus with him.
Well, the Christmas action moves on from Ascot and Haydock at the weekend to Kempton, certainly because in Britain, obviously Ireland, Leopardstown and Limerick stage 4 days each of sensational racing over Christmas. But in Britain, the focus is very much on Kempton and the King George Six Chase coming up on Friday on Boxing Day. Now, against the backdrop of a fantastic King George, which we're looking forward to in a few moments, we've got the latest situation regarding Kempton and its future. Now, you recall that we discussed this in detail on the show last week, reflecting on the comments of Jockey Club Chief Executive Jim Mullen, who in an interview with the Racing Post's Bill Barber referenced the fact that Kempton was out of my hands, the track's future. That harks back to the 2018 deal the Jockey Club did with the housing developer Redrow, which gives Redrow an option to build on Kempton at any point between now and 2028, which could be extended to 2030 if a process has already begun. The reality as part of that deal is that if Redrow takes up the option, which it now would be more likely to do as a result of a recent act that has gone through Parliament, it's a bill that's gone through Parliament, the government's planning and infrastructure bill, which gives the government more say in pushing through planning applications. Redrow therefore will have to decide whether they press the green light on a planning approval process. Racing will wait to see whether or not that happens. Over the last 7 days, more racing figures have spoken about their take on this. Not surprisingly, Nicky Henderson, who has always been the staunchest advocate for keeping Kempton, was very vociferous when talking about that. So was Paul Nicholls when I spoke to him for the Big Read interview that you can still get online as a member of our Ultimate Members Club. Dan Skelton offered a different sort of take when saying that from his perspective, Kempton will close. It's just a matter of when, and the racing industry needs to get used to that. In terms of what Kempton and the Jockey Club are saying, their latest comments came from Simon Durant, who's the general manager at the track. He was speaking last week to the Racing Post when talking about how they've had good sales at Kempton ahead of Boxing Day. Basically sold out the place. He said that our message to racegoers is that nothing is certain or imminent. Our focus is on putting on a fantastic racing programme, not only next week, but throughout 2026 and for years to come. Spelthorne Borough Council, that has within it Kempton Racecourse, it gave a statement in which it said that Kempton is still strongly performing greenbelt land and the government's new legislation doesn't change that. We also spoke to Redrow, who basically said nothing had changed recently, but they would say something if and when there was something to say. Maddie, I suspect there probably will be something to say in the new year as a result of that change in government legislation, because if Redrow has been keen up to now to develop on Kempton, it must be even more keen as a result of the legislation. What have you taken from what we've learned and heard over the last week?
Well, it sounds inevitable, doesn't it, to an extent, which is incredibly sad. Nicky Henderson was, staunchly saying on Saturday, I will not let it happen. So interesting to see just how much power and clout he can have there. We've seen how much sort of support he's drummed up through other trainers and professionals. I spoke to three former jockeys, Tom Scudamore, Noel Feely and Paddy Brennan about the King George and Kempton's potential closure. And they were all understandably very sad to see, the potential of Kempton being under threat. Tom, perhaps most interestingly, also said that, you know, if the numbers aren't balancing and the books aren't properly looking positive, then, you know, he could understand the more businessman's perspective. And, you know, at the end of the day, it needs to be a profitable endeavour. I think for me, the one takeaway I take out of this is just how we've all been kept in the dark up until very, very recently. We didn't know about this deal that had been done. And that just shows total disregard, really, for a lot of us in racing. And it's just really sad. Kempton's very unique. You know, it's uniquely positioned in terms of its location to London. The ground it offers is much quicker than, I'd say, anywhere else in the country, particularly at this time of year. And that can be a real help to trainers. You know, it's a great facility in terms of racecourse gallops. We often see Nicky Henderson going there pre-Cheltenham. I mean, we'd all like to see less racecourse gallops and more racing, but that's besides the point. You know, it's still got a lot of strength as a facility. And it's an iconic Christmas venue as well for the King George Christmas Hurdle. And it's long staged some of the most important racing in our calendar. So it would just be a gigantic shame if Kempton were to be lost. And I think it just, as some of the jockeys who I've just mentioned sort of said, it would be a great shame. And it's representative of just how fragmented the structure of racing is and how little power it seems that trainers have these days. I mean, we've seen how Newbury have developed land for housing and they've still managed to make that work while continuing to race.
And that was at one point an option for Kempton. That was put forward in 2020. Again, what we didn't know, and we said this last week, we didn't know in 2020 when that announcement was made, was it in 2018? They'd done this deal with Redrow, which ties the Jockey Club to an extent, to a large extent, into whatever what Redrow wants to do. Although we should say that Redrow, even if it presses a green button, still has to get planning approval. And Spelthorne Borough Council, what they were saying last week, thinks that they would have a good case to resist that.
It's just a bit of a mess though, isn't it? I mean, the lack of sort of communication and collaboration around the whole thing is what I've found really, really depressing. And I think a lot of people, from what I can garner, share that viewpoint.
Matt, what's not depressing is the King George that we've got to look forward to on Friday. It's a shame that this is all blown up now, because in some ways it's taken away the focus on the race itself, and it looks set to be an absolute humdinger. As we talk now on Monday morning, we're expecting Willie Mullins to run Gaelic Warrior and Factor File, the two horses that fought out that incredible finish to the John Durkin not long ago. For Team GB, we have got the Jukebox Man, who was so good at Haydock on his reappearance. We have got Jello, the runaway winner of the Peterborough Chase. We've got one more from
Django Bay,
who was so impressive in the 1965 Chase at Ascot. We've got last year's first and second, Bambridge and Ile Francais. It is a vintage King George, Matt Rennie. Who wins that vintage King George?
Well, first of all, it's one of the best King Georges I can remember from recent memory in terms of the openness of how many horses you can make a case with. I'm going to stick with Bambridge. I had an anti-post bet on him before his comeback at Cork, where you just take no notice of Bambridge in his first one or two runs of the season, because I just think Joseph O'Brien, I think they, when Joseph O'Brien wants to target a race, you have to follow him. And he's a bit of a horse I've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with. I seem to support him whenever he loses, and seem to leave him in the dark and he goes and wins without my betting slip on it. So I'm going to give him one more chance. But I just think that Gaelic Warrior and Fats File, I think the two to beat are probably Gaelic Warrior and Django Bai. I think Django Bai is going to be a very good horse at 3 miles. I'm just prepared to take a chance on others at the prices. Gaelic Warrior, in fact, File, I'm slightly worried about how much that John Durkin epic may have left on them both. Django Bai, I can obviously see doing very well at this, but maybe it's a year too soon. Possibly the Jukebox Man, possibly the same. You know, I always have the back of my mind, is there going to be that dreaded bounce factor, given he was off for such a long time for Haydock? And I just think a double figure price. I really do like Blythe Bambridge. You can see him sort of stalking around, and if you know Ile France is likely to go out and force a really ferocious pace, it's going to be an absolutely ferocious pace on. And if they start coming back to them, you know Bambridge, like he did last year, is just going to be there to pick up the pieces. So hopefully he can become a dual winner, and hopefully finally I can get him right on my side for once.
I wasn't expecting Matt to tip Bambridge.
I like it, and I see the angle for sure. I agree with him about the John Durkin taking quite a lot out of Factor File and Gaelic Warrior. My approach to this race, I love the Jukebox Man. Of course, won the Corto Star.
How could you not love the Jukebox Man?
Exuberant and just fabulous. Fast for a staying horse. And my thinking before the Irish sort of were, as we see now, confirmed for the race, was that he's got that speed that you need for a King George, whereas Django Bay, who tends to come from the back a little bit more, the Jukebox Man, Ile France, they could just get him at it a little bit and take him out of his comfort zone. But now, the more I think about what I saw at Ascot, I think Django Bay's a proper talent. I put him up for Ryanair after he won the Arkle. We have to do a festival bets for the following year after Cheltenham every year, and I put him up for the Ryanair, and the more I think about it, it could be a Gold Cup horse. He didn't look slow at Ascot, that's for sure. It's going to be an absolute epic renewal, isn't it? You've got everything you want. We've got seemingly a confirmed speed angle in Ile France, who's going to have Harry Cobden on board. That'll be interesting. I see Matt's angle, and that's why I'm beginning to kind of change teams from the Jukebox Man to Django Bay.
So Jangle Bells is what you're hoping to...
I think so. Yeah,
sure, I did that.
We'll see what happens over the next couple of days and who is actually declared and all the rest of it, because you're not sure Willie's going to push the button on both of his, are you?
I just think Willie Mullins will always very openly say that he will make last minute decisions. He leaves things until as long as he can leave them. And so with those two, I'd want to see them declared before I knew they were going to.
What do you think?
I still think and hope that the Jukebox Man might do it.
Oh, see, now you're making me think, do I go back?
Well, he's so electric. Brits, and Ben Pauling was adamant he wasn't fit when he went to Haydock. The form of that race got a good boost on Saturday with Oroco. But I do think he's a tremendous King George. What I don't think we're going to get, and here's another cool link, I don't think we're going to get a 300-1 winner of the King George, because we did have a 300-1 winner last week. It was the strangest of strange weeks. Top of the week in Ireland, it's bobsled time. Won at 250-1. Surprisingly, Connections didn't fancy the horse. And then at the end of the week at Exeter, a 300-1 shot. Blowers, named after Test Match Special legend, scored at Exeter. So at 300-1 for Nigel Hawke and James Best in Grand, that was almost unraceable. Thankfully for Blowers, it just about was raceable. Matt, how much did you have on them both?
None on none. But thankfully, at least Blowers gave us me something cricket related to actually have a cheer about in the last month or so after the absolute embarrassment of England in Australia for the Ashes, which I am, if you cannot tell, I'm still absolutely fizzing about to this very moment.
Fizzing.
And probably will be going into the new year. So at least there was some mild cricketed cheer with that, with Blowers winning there. But yes, none and none was that. I was just, we were talking before the show about biggest wins we've ever had, and it took me a good while to think of them, but I do remember having £5 on Bilsdon Brook to win the 1,000 guineas in 2018 at 66-1. That's the best one I've ever had to land first. And I did follow up with Hermosa at 14-1 a year later. So, I'll be trying to find one for the 1,000 guineas at three-figure strike prices there in 2026.
Maddy, what would be your biggest one?
Oh, I feel like a bit of a fool saying this, but obviously people know I had Golden Ace last year in the Champion Hurdle. Because
it's great.
Like people will just be on about you for after timing, won't they? And then Torquato Tasso as well in the Arc. Oh. So, both didn't go off at 100s, but I had them at 100s. So if I can find one in 2026, I'll be delighted.
Well, let us know in advance.
I'll try.
I mean, you did tell people, to be fair,
I did.
The oddity was that those two wins last week, and again, Blowers was the biggest prize winner in British racing history, but they sort of follow a trend, because this has been a year in which we had Pony Ross won the Triumph Hurdle at 100-1 on his jumping debut. Kirat, a pacemaker for Field of Gold, made much to win the Sussex Stakes at 150-1. Then on Kipco British Champions Day, Powerful Glory won the sprint at 200-1. And then Cicero's Gift won the QE2 at 100-1. Astonishing scenes. Keith Melrose, our betting editor, made a good point that he believes this is now more likely, because SPs, whereas in the past they were all from the on-course action, that's not the case anymore. And the big firms are not really much bothered about those big outsiders. Where if you're on the track and you had a tenner on a 200-1 shot, the bookies would start taking action.
Yeah, exactly that. I spoke to Keith and to Coral's James Knight about this after Powerful Glory won, and it's just becoming more common because of that, is their belief, and how these markets are very different now, the shape of the markets. Paul Keeley's another of our tipsters who's written about this, particularly when it comes to morning prices. You know, early prices now are so much more volatile, it seems, than they used to be. And that is just contributing to some crazy prices. You know, there's often a lot more differentiation, whereas a horse perhaps 10 years ago would have been 66-1. It's now more likely to shift towards the three-figure mark. Yeah. So it's very interesting. And if you can find them, it's brilliant. But some of them just have been absolutely crazy. I mean, we were talking about sort of looking back on the year, and I remember watching that Sussex Stakes, and I will remember that for probably most of my life, because I just thought, what on earth is happening? I've never seen anything like this before. In a group one, you know, it has happened. Pacemakers have beaten their better fancy stable mates in the past, but there was something about the inevitability of it when it got to sort of 2 furlongs out. Powerful Glory, how on earth could anyone have found that?
Stuffed at Beverly the time before.
Just absolute bonkers, and I love it. I love it, because I think it brings drama, it brings interest. There are people who back these horses, they'll always come out of the woodwork, which is great to see. We want to see people winning big. And it just shows the unpredictability of racing. You know, that's one of my favourite things about this game, is that no matter how many times you think you've got it cracked or you think you've got a great bet, something will come along and just blow everything out the water. And I think we need that excitement and that drama in the sport to keep it entertaining. And don't forget, the King George has been a source of quite a few shocks in recent years as well. I mean, Hewick, that was a crazy win, wasn't it? And we've had some really short priced favourites beaten in the race as well, so it's going to be so interesting to see how the whole of racing plays out in the new year, and how many more of these three-figure winners we get.
Well, you're providing a nice link now to the final thing I wanted to ask you both is, as we go towards this Christmas racing period, say astonishingly good racing at Kempton, at Chepstow, at Leopardstown, at Limerick, at Cheltenham, at Newbury.
Aintree
is all for me hurdle on Boxing Day. Matt, is there a horse that you are particularly looking forward to seeing? Not necessarily one that you're going to be chucking the Rennie Millions at, but is there a horse that you're really excited about seeing over Christmas?
Yeah, in terms of a narrative, Brighter Days Ahead. I was firmly on the hype train after her winning the December hurdle last year, and felt badly let down by her at both Cheltenham and Punchestown. Now, it's interesting. Obviously, she's in the Beginners' Chase on the 27th at Leopardstown, as well as possibly as being supplement for the December hurdle. I mean, it'd be great if she does go to the December hurdle, because we've got a ding-dong clash between her and Lossy Mouth and Woodoo then as well. Three barnstorming mares who arguably should all be going towards the champion hurdle if they do run in that December hurdle. I'm just fascinated to see, in terms of how it will leave or where her career goes, because, you know, I think it's fair. You can compare her to almost at an early stage what she was like with Apples Jade. Apples Jade was, despite being a Cheltenham Festival winner, was imperious in the winter months, then got to Cheltenham and Punchestown and was probably not at her best. You know, will she be like that, or can she, you know, redeem herself at the big meetings in the springs? I'm looking forward to seeing her because of the unknown about her still at this stage, despite being unbelievable in that December hurdle last year.
Like your stuff there. Maddie, so many horses I'm excited about seeing, but one that might not be as obvious, Cabral Du Matta, hoping he goes to Cheltenham on New Year's Day for the Relkeel hurdle. It was up at Haydock when he won a handicap last time. Wildly impressive. And they're thinking about a challenge for the Stayers hurdle. I think he could become a contender for that, linking back to the race we were talking about at the top of the programme. What's yours?
Firstly, I like your angle there.
Thank you.
I messaged Dan Skelton after the Fighting Fifth, and I said, I don't suppose you would fancy putting Cabral Du Matta in the champion hurdle picture, would you? Because I thought he showed loads of speed when he won at Haydock, and he was a really dominant winner, and the division just looked so open. I got a resounding no. Stayers hurdle, trainer knows best. But I'm still holding a bit of a flame. If he shows the same sort of speed in the Relkeel, I wonder if they could be tempted to drop him back in trip, because he just seems to have improved a lot. But nevertheless, he's going to be a great Stayers hurdle prospect. What price did you get?
20s. He might even still be 20-1.
Quite interested in that as well. For the future, I'm always looking for these novices, these future stars. He's not one I'd bet on, but speaking of the Skeltons, my daddy Paddy.
Okay.
What an interesting horse he is. You know, had no prior experience before his bumper, won that, won his novice hurdle, won again in a three-runner race at Haydock last time. He's not beaten anything, but crikey, doesn't he look good when he's doing it? Natural ability is oozing from this fella. He is the supreme favourite. He is ridiculously short based on what he's achieved. But I kind of like that Dan Skelton's not afraid to talk up his horses, and he's kind of keeping very quiet about my daddy Paddy. And I think that's because he thinks he's a proper horse, and he just is scared to go too soon almost. And he wants to let the horse do the talking. He's got a wonderful pedigree. They know him very well, having raced the dam. And the you know, the world is his oyster, my daddy Paddy. And if he can put in a brilliant performance in what is likely to be a very, very good grade one, won by Django Bay, wasn't it, right? No less, a couple of years ago, I think. Yeah, he's going to be a real horse to follow this season.
Well, talking about shocks in this programme, what a shock that going into Christmas, we have a British train, not Willie Mullins' train favourite for the Supreme Novices Hurdle. I wonder if that will be the
case. Bonkers, isn't it? And quite a few in there behind, in Britain as well, the Nicky Henderson trained horse.
Active Innocence and, yes, and Old Park Star.
Old Park Star, that's the one I was thinking of, yeah. We're almost making it look like we've got a good shot at it this year, aren't we?
Well, I'm sure there'll be much Cheltenham chat between now and March. For now, however, we are going to be wishing you a happy Christmas. Maddie, happy Christmas to you.
And to you, Lee.
Matt Rennie, happy Christmas to you, sir.
Happy Christmas to you and everyone that watches the front page as well, and a happy new year as well.
And he has stolen my thunder, because I was going to say exactly the same thing. Happy Christmas to all of you watching. We hope you have a fantastic festive period. We will be back here stuffed with turkey and mince pies next week for a show looking back on the Christmas action and reviewing 2025 in horse racing. Until then, may you have a wonderful Christmas, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.